I'm Frank Garza, and welcome to Here and Abroad, a podcast that follows the U.S. men's national team and their player pool across Europe, MLS, or wherever else they play their club football. On today's show, we're going to discuss a variety of topics involving U.S. internationals playing overseas, including which of their clubs will be keeping a close eye on in this final month of the European season, Sergiño Dest's injury and how that will impact the USMNT starting lineup, and where we think the striker depth chart stands as of today. And to help me do all of that, as you can see, I've invited Ryan Tolmich back to the show. Ryan is the American soccer correspondent for Goal. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Glad to be back. It's a fun time now as we're all kind of gearing up for a busy summer. So like you said, there's a lot to talk about on the club level and the international level. So yeah, should be fun here.
Yeah, lots going on, especially, you know, over in Europe. You got teams fighting for Champions League spots, fighting for a title. Some of them already been decided. Others are fighting to not get relegated. And so that's where I kind of want to start is looking at all of the various clubs that U.S., you know, MNT players, you know, play for, you know, over in Europe. Is there a particular club you're really going to be keeping an eye on in this last month of the European season?
So I think there's a few, which is good. You know, we're at the point in the season where, like you said, there's a lot that's already been decided, but there are a few guys that are still, you know, playing for something and have meaningful things to contribute to on the road to the tournaments later this summer. You know, you look at like Venezia in Serie B with Tanner Tessman and Gianluca Buzio. They're pushing for promotion to Serie A, and both of those guys will be key players for the Olympic team later this summer. So that's an exciting one to keep an eye on. You know, you look at the Gio Reyna situation, and I think that's one that every American fan is keeping an eye on just because, you know, Gio is a big talking point, and he's going to remain a big talking point heading towards summer. And you mentioned PSV a little bit in there, and that's definitely also one as well. You know, the title is all but decided there, but, you know, the question is what that means for Ricardo Pepi. Does he get minutes? Does he get a chance to prove himself? What can Malik Tillman contribute to see if he could play his way into more minutes? So, yeah, there's a few clubs out there that are definitely worth diving into.
Yeah, all of those that you mentioned, I'm excited to watch. You know, I think that Nottingham Forest and Gio Reyna is probably the one club that pretty much everyone's going to be following no matter what. I mean, you know, Gio seems to be making some headway there. He started their last two matches. I mean, what have you made of his, you know, performance in those two matches?
So the thing is with Forest right now is it's out of control there, is really the best way to say it, with everything going on with on social media this week, with the club calling out referees and the whole situation just involved the points deductions. You have coach change midseason. You have a million new players over the last 2 years. So it's a wild situation in general at the club. But like looking at Gio specifically, you know, like you said, he's had two real chances. The first one he certainly took in that first start, getting an assist against Wolves, you know, good set piece delivery. You definitely saw the vision with him and what he could contribute. Second game this past weekend, a little bit less so. You know, they gave him, I think it was like 51 minutes, you know, and by the time he came off, it was pretty clear that like nothing was really working. And it's just a situation where, once again, it feels like Gio's not necessarily been played in the right position. You know, he was playing on the wing with Anthony Elanga out. You know, you still have Morgan Gibbs-White playing as that number 10 role that Gio would most likely be, you know, that's his best position. And he hasn't really gotten a look at that. So, yeah, it's just a tough situation overall. Like I said, from the top down, it's kind of chaotic at Nottingham Forest. And Gio has certainly been something of a victim of that. That said, you know, there's still a couple games left for him to maybe get in and help save the club. Really, that's what the club's looking for. You know, they need a little bit of help to try and stay in the league. So, yeah, there's still plenty that could change. But right now, you know, obviously this loan spell has been a pretty big mess.
Yeah, still, I mean, you know, of course, you know, most important, trying to avoid being relegated, you know, but, you know, Gio individually, he's got to be thinking of himself getting in a good position heading into the summer transfer window. Because as you mentioned, this is a loan. Yeah, he could go back to Dortmund. I have a feeling he's not going to want to do that. So if he could string in some good performances here in the Premier League, maybe that helps him, you know, get the more permanent deal, you know, that he's looking for.
Yeah, at the end of the day, look, Gio's not going to be back on this team next season. You know, this is it. So these are the final few weeks for him to, you know, like I said, obviously he's there to help the club survive, and that would be a big a big resume boost if he is able to do that, you know. But, you know, like you said, this is all about the individual situation for Gio now and kind of getting the minutes he needs heading to the Copa America and getting some of that confidence he misses. You know, you look at the way that he's played with the national team, he's obviously never looked like a player that has lost that confidence despite the issues on the club level. But, you know, that brings me back to Christian Pulisic in a way, and that you've watched all of these years where he was struggling on the club level and he would be able to lift it with the national team. And now he's thriving on the club level. And it's like, oh my goodness, what could that mean now that he gets a chance where he's actually heading to the national team confident? And you got to wonder the same thing about Gio. It's like, what would Gio look like if you give him a good run of games at the club level and then he could carry that momentum forward? So yeah, the hope is that he gets those runs of games. You know, it's going to be tough. Like I said, new managers don't want to experiment when they're trying to survive relegation fights. But yeah, Gio is obviously one to keep an eye on in these final few weeks.
Another team I'm going to be keeping an eye on is AS Monaco, because, you know, Balogun, he's, you know, had an up and down season. I interviewed a journalist a couple weeks ago who covers the team, and he did say, yeah, it's kind of seen that he's not really lived up to expectations. Not that he's had a bad year, it's just that he's not, hasn't lived up to maybe the price tag. But everyone's kind of acknowledging that this is the first year for him. He's learning a lot. He's getting settled in. A lot's going to change for next season. Like Ben Yedder's probably not going to be there. He's going to be the guy. And so I really want to see if AS Monaco can secure their Champions League spot, because that would be so huge for Balogun. You know, if he can go into next season as the guy, undisputed, he's playing Champions League football. At that point, it's kind of up to him after that. I mean, can he go out there and put in the good performances? And so, you know, they're in second place now, 3 points clear. So looking good, but I'm going to be really happy if Monaco can secure that Champions League spot, one of those Champions League spots from Ligue 1, and Balogun gets in there next year.
Yeah, like you said, he's an interesting one, just because I don't know if it's necessarily right to say that he like regressed towards the mean a little bit, but he definitely balanced out how good he was last year with some of the ups and downs this year. You know, you would have thought last year would be the growing pains year, but instead, you know, he's had a difficult adjustment to life at Monaco at times, where he's had a few missed penalties, he's had a few tough moments. But, you know, I don't think anyone's doubting him. Like you said, you obviously see the vision with him, even if it's not all coming together at once. And I know we're going to get into that later with the U.S. striker picture. But in terms of, you know, his standing at Monaco, like you said, it's something where I think everyone understands that there's something there. And it's worth being patient for. You know, there have been good moments this season that have shown what he can bring to a team. And there have been bad moments where he's been able to learn from him. So I think, you know, like I said, if you finish the season and Monaco gets their Champions League spot and Balogun has a decent little finish to the season that he can, you know, kind of build off of, I think everyone will say this was a perfectly okay first year, even if it wasn't the heights of what he had last season.
Yeah, I agree. And we are going to dig into that striker more in depth, into that striker position a little bit later. But where I want to go next is one of these other teams you mentioned, PSV, and you mentioned Ricardo Pepi, but some big news came out of PSV over the weekend that Sergiño Dest has a major, looks like, knee injury. He's going to be out for a long time, most likely going to miss the Copa America. I don't know if anything new's come out, you know, this morning, but I still haven't seen like a clear communication of what the injury is, but it looks like we're going to be without Sergiño Dest for Copa America. And that's obviously going to be a big hit for the U.S. And I want to talk about what are some of our options to kind of replace him and minimize the, I guess, negative impact of that. I mean, what do you see as the different options and then maybe the best option in your mind?
Yeah, so a little bit of a shameless plug. We did have an article on Goal go live today about this exact situation, just because, like you said, there are a few different ways to approach it. I think the most likely one is Joe Scally, who is a player that's obviously super different from Sergiño Dest, which sort of, you know, messes things up a little bit tactically. You know, you look at Dest and he's a player that, you know, gets forward and doesn't just get forward, but he gets forward and tucks in and takes up the space that Tim Weah creates. And Scally's not necessarily a player that does that. You know, he's more of a defensive minded player and someone that has put in some really good shifts in the Bundesliga, but we still haven't quite seen him like seize his US chance. You know, we haven't had like a vintage like Joe Scally, like, all right, he's arrived game. So, you know, that's something that he'll need to do if he gets this chance. You know, he's always kind of been Dest's backup. He didn't get the World Cup minutes that he was looking for, and this is kind of the chance for him to kind of sink or swim if he is given that shot. So that's one option. The other option is if you want to go something a little bit more like for like would be to move Tim Weah back. You know, he's played there for Juventus this year. And, you know, when you look at the system that you could create, it would be somewhat similar in that it would still be Tim Weah running up and down the line with a player tucking in. So in some ways, it would be less of a mess tactically if you did that. But obviously, you'd have to trust Tim Weah to do a lot of defending. And then there's a third option in there, which is kind of the nuclear option, I think. And I don't think it's the one they'll necessarily go with, but is Tyler Adams back at right back? You know, they did it very early in Berhalter's tenure. Right now, there's all sorts of discussions of what the midfield would look like. And does Gio play as a number 10 and yada, yada. And, you know, this could be a way to just get everyone on the field. You know, I don't necessarily think that Berhalter will do that just because it does, you know, take Adams out of his best position. And we still don't even know if he's going to be healthy yet. But yeah, those are three, you know, interesting options. And, you know, it could be situational, but there's going to be some big decisions that Berhalter is going to have to make with that position as we kind of move forward.
What do you think about McKennie as an option there? Because if I remember correctly, in the Nations League semifinal against Jamaica, when Scally got yanked, McKennie got moved there.
Yep.
And maybe that was just because they were in like an all offensive push. But I mean, do you think he's a realistic option there? Because the midfield does seem to be a little bit, you know, crowded now too.
Yeah, like I said, it's the same situation in essentially with Adams, where if you just flip-flop those two, where it's just like, all right, yeah, you take Weston and you keep him on the field, and you keep Tyler Adams on the field, you keep Yunus Musah on the field, and this is the way to do it, then so be it. You know, like you said, Weston played there in the Nations League semifinals. He played there at Juventus to start the season when he was, you know, quote-unquote Tim Weah's backup for a little bit before he reclaimed his midfield spot. So yeah, like that, those are all options. You know, these guys have proven that they could play there. You know, it may not be ideal, but things rarely are ideal when you're playing tournament soccer, and sometimes you got to adjust to things on the fly. So yeah, it could be something depending on games where you look at, you know, when you're playing, you know, when you're not playing, basically in the two non-Uruguay group stage games, maybe you go with a Weston McKennie there to keep it a little bit more attacking and get everybody on the field. But, you know, when you're playing Uruguay, maybe you go Scally because you're a little bit more worried about, you know, what, you know, you have to deal with defensively. So it could all be situational. None of this is, you know, written in stone. But yeah, there are some options there, and some of them will upset the tactical balance a little bit more than others. And that's kind of the line that Berhalter is going to have to walk once the Copa America gets going.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, think about it like that, those first two Copa America games being, you know, I don't want to say no match is going to be easy, but yeah, you know, they're easier. And so if you think about, they'll have a run of four matches maybe to experiment a little bit with the mm-hmm. two friendlies they have pre-Copa America, and then maybe they can fine tune some things in those next two matches. Then you definitely want to have things figured out by the time you get to Uruguay. Let me ask you a little bit more about Joe Scally, you know, because I feel like he was a little bit of a scapegoat in that Jamaica match with that early goal. Yeah. You know, everyone kind of blamed that on him. He got yanked at halftime. And I'm just wondering how much Berhalter like trusts him. I mean, I know for like one game we've seen Joe Scally get plugged in and they just, you know, go for it. But when you have, you know, several months to prepare, all these other friendlies to prepare, I'm wondering if he thinks that's going to be good enough, or if he's going to try to do one of these other like more unique options that you mentioned with McKennie, Adams, or something like that. I mean, do you think Scally's trusted, you know, by Berhalter?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? Like you said, Scally was partially at fault for the goal against Jamaica, certainly, but it wasn't totally him. And he very much, if you check Twitter, you would have thought that he wasn't even on the field and let everything happen himself. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, it wasn't his best moment, and he did have some difficult moments in that game. But Scally obviously is a good defender. You know, you don't play at the level he does in the Bundesliga and have the performances he does in the Bundesliga without being a really, really good player. The question is how he fits to what the U.S. want to do tactically. Because Serginho Dest as a player, you know, for all of his faults, opens up so many different possibilities attacking-wise. You know, the way that he can get forward and create, it really just adds another whole dimension to that part of the game. Scally doesn't add that. And that's fine in some situations and with some tactics and some setups. Like, that's totally fine. You know, the modern fullback thing, like, you... Everyone has different interpretations of what fullbacks are supposed to do these days, and it's fine to have one that is more defensive oriented. But how does that ripple effect go through the rest of the team is the big question. And that, you know, it's so easy to say like this individual is better than this individual, but at the end of the day, like, it's a big, you know, cohesive environment where pieces have to fit together when you put together a starting 11. So the question is how Scally fits in the team, and then how others react to him being in the team. Does that mean that someone like McKennie has more room to roam if he's playing in midfield? Does that mean that Tim Weah cuts inside a little bit more than he would when Serginho would be occupying that space? Like, there's just different questions of how that all works tactically. But at the end of the day, like I said, Joe Scally's a good player, and the U.S. has plenty of time to figure out what this could all look like when it does come together like this. So yeah, I think we'll have to see. Like I said, it's a big test for him, and this is his chance to move past that, you know, quote unquote backup role. So yeah, there's a lot to figure out, certainly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how they line up in those friendly matches. And then also when the roster gets named, if they decide to bring in like a veteran like Yedlin or something as a backup plan. Another interesting thing, you know, when it comes to the roster is this striker position, you know, and I just feel like Haji Wright, man, this guy has like...
He's making a case.
He's come from nowhere. It's been like this like runaway train type of thing where it's like the guy didn't even make the last roster technically. And now he has like so much momentum going for him because of his performance in the Nations League, because of the run Coventry City made and the, you know, FA Cup. And he's scoring goals regularly. I mean, it's really kind of blown up this striker depth chart position, especially when you consider Pepe's not playing now and Balogun's kind of struggled. I mean, how do you see that depth chart, you know, today? If like Berhalter had to call in a roster today, I mean, how would you rank them, you know, 1 to 3?
So right now, I think there's a clear 4 in that you have Pepe, Balogun, Wright, and Sargent. You have those 4 who I think are clearly further ahead. And realistically, you're taking 2, maybe 3 to the Copa America. So you're going to have to figure that out. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision because it is a rough one. But there are ways to go about it. One thing you could possibly do is use Pepe with the Olympic team over the Copa America team. You know, he's age eligible to go to the Olympics. He could start there. Could that be better for his development? You know, that could be a way to sort of give him the minutes he needs while also opening up a roster spot with the Copa America team. But realistically, when you look at it, you know, for me, it's so difficult. Like I said, Josh Sargent, like the amount of goals he's been scoring for Norwich is insane. Haji Wright has had so many big moments, including saving the U.S.'s butt in the Nations League. You know, Balogun's still the guy where, you know, he is probably the most talented of the group, although, like you said, he isn't scoring as much as the others. So it could be a thing, once again, where it's situational, where you look at, you know, against some of the teams that are going to, you know, drop in more of a low block. Maybe you don't use Balogun because it takes away his best asset, which is his ability to run in behind. But rather, when you play a team like a Uruguay or an Argentina or Brazil who's going to have the ball, maybe you go with Balogun because he could stretch them out a little bit more. But yeah, it's such a difficult thing. And like I said, it might all come down to form in these last few weeks and who's still scoring and who's dried up a little bit. But yeah, it's going to be a tough decision to decide which of the 2 or 3 make the roster. And then ultimately which one starts in each game, because it's sort of the opposite problem they had at the World Cup where no one was scoring, and now you have all these guys with all these different attributes and you get to pick from them. So it is a little bit of a champagne problem, but still a problem nonetheless.
Yeah, I think I lean towards, you know, still Balogun, and then I would put Haji Wright. I'd have those two probably as my top, just because of the form that Wright is in right now, and I'd want to understand more about what's going on with Pepe, because I mean, he hasn't even made the bench. He hasn't even made the roster in like PSV's last 2 matches. I haven't heard any announcement about like an injury that he has. I mean, I know his agent, you know, made those comments, which might have ruffled some feathers, but I haven't, I mean, tell me if you have, but I haven't heard any type of acknowledgement of why he hasn't even been making the game day lineup. And so I'd want to understand more about that, you know, to really kind of understand how to, you know, position him. But I think he's the one that's kind of like slipped now that with Haji Wright's surge. I think Pepe's the one that's kind of slipping now. And Sargent, I don't know, man. I just don't know if I trust his health, you know, to put him on like a Copa America roster. I almost want to see him go through like a full, I mean, maybe not a full season, but a lot more months of a season before I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to give you this roster spot.
Yeah. Like you said, with Pepe, it is a tough one. Just because, you know, in the last few months, he hasn't had those minutes, and maybe that does change in the coming weeks with the title wrapped up. They go, all right, Luke de Jong, you had a great season. You're a legend. Let's give the kid a chance and see what he can do, because nothing really matters anymore. So maybe that happens, and that sort of changes the picture. Once again, this is all super fluid, but yeah, right now it does feel like if you had to narrow it down, you know, 1 through 4, it does feel like Pepe might be in that 4 slot, just because, like you said, he hasn't had the minutes. And it's an interesting time for him once again, just because, you know, you mentioned there the agent stuff, and it seems like his club future is being discussed again, you know, just 1 year after he joined PSV, and obviously the international thing. Does he make the Copa America roster? Does he play at the Olympics? You know, it seems like he's in flux again. You know, it seems like he's always kind of been a player that's sort of been in limbo with both the national team and his club situation. So he's in that weird spot again. But yeah, this could all change with just a good run of games to end the season, which could very well happen. You know, PSV have the league on lock, and that's all sorted. So maybe it is a good chance to get him some games for PSV, at least, as, you know, selfishly, to see what they have in him. But yeah, you know, Pepe is sort of the interesting one right now, because it feels like he could either rise or fall in these coming weeks pretty quickly, depending on how things go, while the others have at least, you know, solidified their resumes a little bit more. I feel like Pepe's has a little bit left to be written. So we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah. I feel for the guy. He hasn't had a bad season at all. He's not playing because he's not performing. He just, the guy in front of him is just having a magical season, you know, but it doesn't look like Luke de Jong is going to be going anywhere next season. I mean, we'll see, but, he's in a tough spot.
Yeah, and look, that's one of the things you sign up for when you join a top club, in that there's good players, and you have to beat them, you know, whether they're veteran players or good young players. And when you're playing for, you know, obviously PSV doesn't get the respect that maybe, you know, Weston McKennie at Juventus or Christian Pulisic at AC Milan, but PSV is a big club. They have talented players. They always are bringing in young stars that could grow into something special. And if Pepe wants to be one of those young stars, you have to, you know, fight through these moments and then prove yourself. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens when he does get the chance. You know, he had a few in the Champions League, a few in the league, and you're kind of waiting for his next one. But yeah, this is, you know, Luke de Jong's now the measuring stick. And if you want to be a top level forward, you're going to have to find a way to at least catch up to him to a point where the club gives you the minutes that, you know, obviously he and his agent think he deserves. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch going forward for sure.
Yes, it will. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll make sure and put links in the show notes to your X account, which is at Ryan Tolmich, and also to your work at Goal. Before I let you go, any final thoughts you'd like to share? Any other things from the European like season you'll be keeping an eye on this last month? I mean, anything at all?
No, like you said, it's just an interesting time, because now it's starting to feel like it's really all coming together. You know, since the World Cup, it's been like, all right, who's going to get added to the player pool? Is this dual national coming? Is this guy going to keep his spot? But now we're kind of all, you know, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel that is the Copa America, where we're going to really figure out what the situation is. And obviously, you know, I would say when you look at the US 11, you probably know 8 or 9 of the starters. But, you know, now there's a few questions about, you know, how that looks and how the team will play and who makes the squad and who's a backup and who goes to the Olympics. And there's just so many interesting questions about this team and about this program right on down. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun summer of soccer. There's a lot to watch, and the player pool is only going to keep shifting and evolving as we head towards 2026. So yeah, this is a good midway point in the cycle, and it's going to be a fun time to see once again where this team stacks up against the very best, because that's what they want to be, and this is the chance to prove it.
I'm ready. Can't wait. And yeah, we'll know answers to a lot of these questions, you know, in the next month and a half. So really looking forward to that. Thanks again, Ryan.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And thanks to everyone for listening to Here and Abroad. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a fellow USMNT fan. I'm Frank Garza. You can follow me on X at Frank Garza 007, and I'll be back next week with a new episode.